Welcome to another edition of Financial Markets Insights. And today we're going to be exploring the future of capital markets infrastructure with CEO and founder of AIMI, Ollie Capman. Ollie, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Slav. I'm good, thank you. Nice to be here. Looking forward to our discussion.
Could you share a bit about your background in capital markets and how that experience helped to shape what you're now doing at AIMI?
Yeah, definitely. If I think about it, you know, that for the last nearly 20 years now, which is quite scary, I've spent most of that time working in front office trading connectivity and data situations. Right? Started at the London Stock Exchange with looking after the market data platforms there. And then since then, worked at some other exchanges, banks, most recently fintechs, all built around the concept of connecting to financial markets infrastructure, specifically exchanges, data vendor providers. And I think, you know, one of the most constant key themes across that period is the rate of change that comes out of these venues and the amount of work that's driven to effectively stand still, to effectively, from a consumer perspective, often, you know, tread water and keep the lights on. You know, you've got exchanges quite rightfully and understandably making changes to their APIs and their interfaces and their policies, et cetera, based on enhancements to their own business model, technology developments, and of course, you know, factors, wider factors, macroeconomic factors such as regulatory changes and market conditions. And all of this puts a lot of effort on the consumers, right? Who both have to just stay abreast and on top of the plethora of changes that are coming out and also implement and execute those, which in itself can obviously take a lot of resource and consumption resource that could be used to actually deliver sort of differentiating business value. So AIMI was really founded on that principle, which is, you know, given some of the recent technology developments, particularly, there must be a better way to do this, right? Some of the challenges that have been faced in the past around trying to provide more straight through processing and automation in this space, perhaps with involvement in things such as generative AI, can be overcome. And maybe we can approach this in a different way that uses technology and automation versus people and resource.
If I can just stop you right there, there's a couple of things I'd like to expand on if we can. First off, you talk about this constant change and, you know, it's a lot coming out from the exchanges. What's really driving that change? Is it new products? Is it innovation? What's really driving that? Why isn't there a more steady status quo?
I think if you look at an individual exchange, actually the rate of change is probably manageable, right? If you're an average exchange, you might do, you know, you've got some of your large exchanges like Eurexcetra that are very disciplined in terms of their one major upgrade a year. And you can almost set your clock by it each year that it's going to be in November and you can plan for it. You've got others that perhaps do quarterly releases or a couple of releases a year. And often they're not huge releases in themselves. They're not insurmountable. I think what happens, and yes, they're driven by enhancements and launches of new products, improvements in functionality, maybe some technology improvements, maybe just maintenance, maybe, you know, as I mentioned, regulation. We saw a plethora of changes in Europe around MiFID II and then obviously around Brexit as well, actually, as exchanges had to create these additional venues. And again, if you take each one on its own, it's manageable. I think it's the cumulative effect of all of those. And then on top of that, you've got all the maintenance pieces around instrument listings and tick size updates and everything else. And it's just that cumulative effect of all of these changes and the volume that becomes as a market participant that's connecting to a global portfolio of trading venues.
That rate of change, as you say, might not seem that large, but when you compound everything together, that's when it's really causing the issues for market participants. Something else you touched on was the lack of standards, saying everybody's speaking their own language. So if you're trading equities, you're going to have an order management system, you're going to have a smart order router, you're going to have exchange gateways, but between one trading participant and the next, it's not identical. Everything's slightly different. Everything's written in a slightly different protocol. And also some of the legacy stuff that people have to support. Can you expand on some of the issues that you see where you don't have streamlined architecture across market participants and how much effect that has?
Yeah, definitely. I think if we start at that first point around standards, right, there's technical standards. And obviously there's been some, you know, for the last 30 years we've had FIX. And FIX provides a out-of-the-box way of being able to connect. But obviously everyone's fixed implementation is their fixed implementation. And over time it...
Custom fixed tags, et cetera, et cetera.
start getting into the 7,000s, 8,000s tags, right? Yeah. And so, but it's a handshake. It's a rule of engagement from which you can then drive. Obviously, on the data side, there was attempts at that with FAST and SBE, but we haven't really seen that same adoption. And then, of course, outside of Fix, everyone still has their own proprietary interfaces because of how verbose Fix can be in terms of the speed and performance. So there's obviously the challenges around interfaces and the multiple different interfaces. But I think, as you said, it's also almost a taxonomy, or the word I'm using a lot lately, the ontology of how we talk about these services as well, that makes it very hard to compare training venues together and against each other, or to understand contextually how these all sit together. And that's where we've spent a lot of time. And that's where it's quite important, I think, when you're, you know, as much as AI and generative AI and LLMs are key, again, your AI strategy is only as good as your data strategy at that point. And so being able to have a catalog of all of these things defined in a way that's comparable is actually very key, because fundamentally all of these specifications are PDF documents, right? And again, every exchange or every data provider quite rightly defines their set of services and systems that best suits their business model, and why shouldn't they? So trying to sort of map those into an ontology that can drive an LLM has actually been one of our first key priorities for exactly that reason.
Yeah, it's effectively we're saying there is a consistent inconsistency in the architecture between each organization, where at the high level, they're all effectively doing the same thing, but they're implementing with numerous different types of technology or subsets of technology to provide those same services. Moving on, Amy's focused on automating the central capital markets technology change, which I think everybody would embrace. But before we speak about that change, can you frame what capital markets infrastructure has looked like historically and why we've ended up where we are now?
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back to that standard concept, right? So what is capital markets infrastructure? Everyone probably has a slightly different view of what that might be. But fundamentally, I think we're aligned there, right? It's your trading and execution. You know, it's the financial markets infrastructure that powers trading and execution, data and data publication and analytics. And then you've got your clearing, your settlement, your custody. And then, of course, all your connectivity and infrastructure that glues all of this together, which is actually a key part of it. And I think it's that gluing of APIs and connectivity that is so fundamental, obviously, to how markets, you know, for longer than I've been in the industry, is so fundamental to sort of how markets operate. But as we just talked about, obviously digresses or diverses quite a lot across different offerings and different provisions, which means that actually it becomes very manual, right? It becomes about expertise. It becomes about being the guy that understands Optiq, or being the girl that implemented, you know, Eurex or whatever it is. And a lot of that knowledge becomes into the person who just has the most experience of engaging with that protocol, and, you know, understands how it works and knows how to find their way around the PDFs, their provisioning systems, etc. And so all of those rules of engagement are just specified in those flat PDFs that are just going through these constant change cycles. And you have these manual processes that are handling all of this within the firms, because it's so critical, right? It's fundamental. You miss one of those changes, you're out in the market. And I spent a lot of time as feed handler and gateway technology provider, and we had a few squeaky bum moments on a Sunday night with a few firms where we're going, okay, is this going to work? And so quite rightly, it needs a lot of attention. And when, you know, we'll probably talk about this later, but we always say we're trying to be a co-pilot, not an autopilot. Yeah. We're not trying to replace the governance and oversight that needs to remain in these mission critical functions. But there's probably steps within that process that we can accelerate. And there's probably a lot of noise that we can try and calm down so that everyone can focus on the areas that need the most attention.
Something you touched on briefly there is silos of experience. If we look at the diverse nature of the different architectures, protocols, technologies that are used, we're now in a position where we have people who are being paid enormous amounts of money to support very much so legacy architecture without new people coming in to learn that technology. And that causes massive problems. How do you see that changing?
It's definitely a challenge. I think there's been quite a lot of conversations over the last few years around the brain drain within this industry, particularly in the market data side of things. How do you bring fresh, new talent up the ranks and invest in that expertise? Because people have been caught or the shiny light of new technology and Silicon Valley and all the other sort of sexy things that are happening. So yeah, and you do therefore end up with systems that people don't fully understand how they operate or are afraid to touch. And you end up with these single points of failure within firms that have that specific knowledge. And so whilst our primary goal is around, you know, helping to assist in the automation and drive productivity, there's absolutely definitely benefits here in terms of also being able to provide access, scaling access to expertise and information that currently can be quite siloed. And hopefully by bringing in these new technologies, we start to become more interesting again to some of the younger generations that perhaps are looking at other industries.
Yeah, I think that's very important to bring new blood into the industry and make it an attractive place to forge your career. Something you touched on earlier again is this, the flat PDFs, the fact it's a people problem. Can you give us an idea, what does that look like in terms of resources? You know, so how many people are just getting tied up dealing with these changes?
No, it's a tricky one because every firm has a different operating model and structure, and there's so many factors in terms of how you're processing. But we're talking thousands of notices a month, you know, hundreds a day and thousands of notices a month. So just the monitoring and consumption of those notices can take up considerable resource. Not then considering the agile implementation time of then having to move those impactful changes through your existing delivery process. So, you know, it's certainly in the realm of multiple people. I think it's not as easy to just put a particular head on it because it's probably touching on multiple people's time. If you look at that cumulatively, yeah, you're looking at multiple people a month that are being consumed overall by this change process and could be spending their time doing much more value-added activities.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. You've got core infrastructure there, you've got trading technology, support people. You've even got compliance people involved in this sort of thing as well. So you're actually drawing on resource from whole swathes of the different parts of the organization, including down to heads of trading, et cetera, who really should be spending their times on, as you say, more value-added work. So what's now driving this movement of change and what blockers are inhibiting progress in the space?
I always say, I think we know as an industry that there are opportunities to have different operating models. And if you look at some of the other industries and modern API development, you've got RESTful APIs, you've got WebSockets, you've got GPRC, et cetera, that come with much simpler processes around maintenance and understanding, et cetera. So we wrote a blog about it the other day, sort of exploring what the future might look like. And there certainly is, it's not that there isn't a willingness to change. I think that it's the challenge is that it's just this, historically, it's been a wholesale shift. Right, you've got to bring everyone along with you in a revolutionary type phase of changing that technology and those interfaces and everyone adapting to that. And that's extremely significant, particularly when the immediate impact isn't direct, it's impact over time that you're going to see those benefits. So I think for me, what's changed and what we think about as we call it kind of operational middleware is this idea that we can use particularly things like generative AI, but more modern technology developments to make that a much more iterative process. And in the same way you've got, you know, your RESTful API layer sat between your internal systems and your client systems and actually allows you to abstract that out and refresh and modernize your technology in the background, there's no reason why this operational middleware can't actually help drive some of these changes by abstracting away, not sitting in the critical trading path, but by abstracting away this hard-coded static dependency of configuration and interface and services and actually making the two more dynamic so that one cares about services and they can be mapped to infrastructure. That's where I think we now have an opportunity to head. And you only have to look at, say, something like digital assets, which obviously have been built from scratch in a modern way using RESTful APIs, et cetera. But as they start to move into the institutional space and try and attract institutional clients, they're starting to switch to build fixed interfaces and everything else, because that is the most straightforward and simplest way to engage with this marketplace. So yeah, I think we've just got an opportunity to decouple infrastructure and interfaces versus services and consumption using some more of the technology developments that have happened over the last couple of years.
I think a problem is, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, if you look at the legacy infrastructure of institutional financial markets versus digital assets, almost as you see those fixed interfaces being put in place, moving match engines out of the cloud and putting them on colo, on tin, to be able to access that institutional market, innovation is being stifled by legacy. And what you then end up with is innovation not evolving and legacy not evolving, potentially moving forwards to that new normal. And how do you see that playing?
It's an interesting one because, as you say, you're almost operating to the lowest common denominator in these spaces. Yeah. And, you know, there's other angles to that as well. Let's not forget that within traditional finance in this concept, the operating models, the delivery processes, they've evolved over a significant amount of time to protect the markets. And obviously there was a lot about this in MiFID II after the flash crash, to ensure that the way in which services are entering production are using best practice into, you know, low risk and using best practice to limit any potential downside or impact, because it is so significant when it happens. And so absolutely should those models in the digital asset space ensure that they're adopting all of those same best practices and processes and have all the guardrails and everything in place. But I think it's quite indicative of that space that therefore, yes, they've also had to adopt to the same interface model and the same engagement model that exists today, because that's the quickest way, as much as it isn't, it's an oxymoron because it's not from a technology standards perspective, but it is actually the quickest way to be onboarded inside of one of these organizations because they know how to operate it, they know how to bring it on board and accelerate it. We think that modern technology gives you an opportunity to rethink that approach and marry the best of those two worlds, which is the rapid onboarding and understanding of interfaces, et cetera, in a much more programmatic way, but with all of the existing guardrails and processes in place that protect the markets, that protect individual investors, that ensure we have an orderly market, et cetera. And that's, I think, what's driving that momentum now, which is as we start to talk about generative AI and LLMs and productivity gains. And we're talking about that a lot in the data space, right? You know, firms are looking at all of the data and how they can use that in their AI strategy. Why shouldn't we apply that to the plumbing as well? Why shouldn't we use that same approach in all of the plumbing that drives this so that we can see those same benefits? And exchanges and vendors can have much shorter release and onboarding cycles, and consumers and participants can spend much more of their time on their business priorities and roadmap rather than effectively treading water.
Keeping the lights on.
And yeah, keeping the lights on, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a very interesting evolution. And thinking about that, what do you think the future looks like for capital markets in regards to the evolution of infrastructure, technology adoption, and what the opportunities we'd like to see manifest themselves as a result?
I think in my mind, it's three very clear things. It's dynamic, it's data-driven, and it's digital. And that last point, I think, actually comes, probably feeds into your previous question of what's driving this change. You know, in the retail world, and particularly in the neobank space, et cetera, we've all become used to being self-service. Everything's digital and passed between each and every organization very quickly. And we have those expectations, I think, more and more in this world. And we're starting to see much more of a transition to that across multiple different aspects of capital markets infrastructure. You know, there are providers out there providing self-service, market data, provisioning and management tools that encapsulates all of that into a digital record. There's obviously stuff going on the blockchain around, I think I saw Chainlink do something the other day around corporate actions on the blockchain, that similar concept of encapsulating it into a single golden record. So there's multiple different, I think, initiatives that are driving this idea of encapsulating rules of engagement, data licensing, corporate actions, et cetera, into digital records that can actually drive automation, et cetera. And that obviously links to being data-driven. So allowing that data to then, you know, by being digital and encapsulated, being able to drive much more of the workflow, and then dynamic in terms of actually much more immediacy in terms of then when you've got that foundation of data-driven, digital, actionable data sets, then you should be able to be much more dynamic in terms of how you apply those to your workflows and automations, so that you can start to look at much more self-driven discovery and provision of services, much more instant delivery of access and straight through processing throughout the whole provisioning chain.
Yeah, I think the idea that if you want to onboard a customer, you can give them an interface to log some details, provide some documents, and you've got an account open within 24 hours would revolutionize the capital market space in terms of actually servicing customers, because at the moment that historically has been a very manual and incredibly slow process. And that's just one example of how that innovation and reducing the friction that you were alluding to allow change to be much more dynamic and the world to work much more freely. That's been an extraordinary insight, and really appreciated your experience, your candor, and in the way you articulated those issues. Anything you want to touch on just as a roundup, because that's covered quite a lot of space here, but any final thoughts on what we've been talking about?
I guess the one thing to add, and particularly in our space where people start talking about automation and reducing timelines and everything, and particularly when you're talking about things like generative AI, it's still early days, right? And you know, we've touched on it a couple of times, I think, in the conversation, which is what I think we're talking about here, and particularly where our focus is on this initial first version of our platform around the exchange change management and how you can drive better productivity there. It's about the manual tasks that sit between those core guardrails. We always say it's copilot and autopilot. It's about helping accelerate the work that people are doing, not replace it completely, because there are all of these guardrails in place for key reasons. You know, we're just talking about onboarding and provisioning of new services. You've got to go through your KYC and AML process. Can it be done more quickly and with less manual box ticking? That's the goal. But obviously what we are working very closely with the wider industry on this, how do we develop these in a way that ensures you've still got all the right checkpoints and guardrails in place, but you can just be confident that you can do more of it at scale. And so, yeah, I think that's the one thing is, you know, we're going to have to continue to see how the use of generative AI evolves within our space. It's going to have to be at a very controlled, iterative pace that takes account of risk and control as much as it does productivity and acceleration.
I think that's been a cracking summary. It gives us a real look forward to, and hopefully we gain the advantages that we've touched on. Ollie, thank you very much indeed for your time and joining us here on Financial Markets Insights, and look forward to getting you back and maybe chatting to you as we see this evolve over time.
Thanks for having me.